Hi everybody, welcome to this episode of Enlightenment Today. I'm Jason. Today we'll be speaking about spiritual bypassing, which is very common with people who follow a lot of spiritual traditions in the world in the modern day. Now, spiritual bypassing is a term coined by John Wellwood in 1984. John Wellwood is a psychologist, and it's become popular in the modern day through an integral psychotherapist known as Robert Augustus Masters. So what is spiritual bypassing? Well, spiritual bypassing is the use of spiritual practices and beliefs to avoid dealing with painful feelings, unresolved wounds, and developmental needs. So what we could say is the wrong perception, the wrong use of spiritual practices, and the wrong understanding of spiritual beliefs and its philosophy and how we could apply it to our lives. We see this a lot, especially if you look into people who follow Advaita Vedanta, especially, and other practices, even in Buddhism and some other ones, especially from the East, where a lot of, especially Westerners, spiritual bypass through the use of such philosophies and practices. We see this with a lot of non-dualism as well, where people believe that they're not the person and so forth and so on. So usually people use a lot of these spiritual practices and beliefs to numb their pain. So, you know, as people tend to look for alcohol or drugs to numb their own psychological pain, we'll do anything for that. So we prefer pain numbing solutions which repress our pain, actually. And so spiritual practices and their belief systems are often used in the same context when we think about it, you know, especially people who've, like I said, you follow Advaita Vedanta and follow a guru, they will use them as their pain numbing solution without doing any real work, any real psychological work. And when you see this, when someone does continue to suppress that pain deep, deep, deep down within them, they sometimes bite like a vicious dog. You see this, like if they get really pissed off or something really ticks them, there's no ability for them to discern in that moment that their anger is bubbling over into aggression, okay? So we have to be very careful of that. We do see this. I've seen this a lot in India where people say that they're gonna remain as the self, and then as soon as someone accidentally stands on their foot, the line comes out and they can't even see the anger that is turning into aggression. They cannot even be conscious and aware of that, which in itself is not the practice of Advaita Vedanta, to be clear to all of you out there. So spiritual bypassing itself is a very persistent shadow of spirituality. We need to realize that. It's been there for a long time, you know, since the ancient times. We have to remember though, that back in the ancient times when a lot of, especially Eastern philosophy was flourishing, the society and the culture was completely different. So now, because our society and culture is completely different from that in the ancient times, spiritual bypassing is becoming prevalent because we live in such a socially active world where psychology is becoming emphasis of our practice, because our own psychological work is needed to understand the deeper levels, especially of Eastern philosophy. So in saying that, we have to realize that the honeymoon period of spirituality is over, especially Eastern spirituality. You know, we've kind of danced with this for the last, I'd say, a couple of hundred years, and people have taken it authentically, and some people have taken it and misinterpreted it. And we have all of these funny spiritual things like, I don't know, DNA activation, wrong understandings of Kundalini, wrong understandings of the chakra system. And again, a lot of them are not related to psychology, and they're sort of thought about in the terms of energy in a funny way. So we need to realize that this honeymoon period is over. You know, we have to come back to reality and get real and see how Eastern philosophy actually benefits our life and spirituality, I should say. So Robert Augustus Masters states in his book, you know, enough bubbles have been burst. Enough spiritual teachers, Eastern and Western, have been caught with pants or halo down. Enough cults have come and gone. Enough time has been spent with spiritual baubles, credentials, energy transmissions, and guru centrism to sense deeper treasures. Okay. I love that quote. it's kind of brings people back to reality. And as we know, we've seen many, many spiritual teachers literally with their pants down. And this is all a result of spiritual bypassing. Even themselves are committing this thing. And we all have to embrace too that we've all spiritual bypassed in our life. Even if we don't even know spirituality, people who are not aware of spirituality themselves have spiritual bypassed, meaning they have suppressed their pain and not done any psychological work to reveal this pain. So basically, the real and authentic spirituality that we're all seeking will not take root until spiritual bypassing is outgrown. Okay, so what does that mean by outgrown? Well, that means that we need to stop turning away from our pain and go inward to it. You know, we need to stop thinking that spirituality is here to make us feel better. You know, a lot of people come into spirituality and think, I'm going to just be positive forever. And it's like, no, negativity exists. Spirituality itself is about getting your hands dirty. It's about going in, diving deep within and doing the real internal work, the real psychological work to alleviate all of that latent pain that we have within us, all of those psychological problems that we've never revealed, okay? So that's what it's about. So we need to stop turning away from our pain and turn inwards towards it and do the psychological work so that we become not only a better person, but understand the spiritual depths that the masters were talking about in the ancient times. So what are the telltale signs of spiritual bypassing? Well, they're obvious, really. First of all, a lack of grounding, and also in the body experiences. You know, you see a lot of people who they pretend they're not their body and so forth and so on, and they have all these dreamy concepts. You know, I've had people tell me before that they've meditated and they travel through the universe, and you know they're lying, but you don't have the heart to tell them. This is a lack of grounding. You know, first of all, meditation is not about that. You know, another sign is also the way that a lot of people cling to New Age misinterpretations of oneness, you know, which usually is superimposed onto certain Eastern spiritual paths as Advaita Vedanta, as I said to you before. We see this a lot. You know, a lot of people misinterpret what oneness actually means. And people are going around saying everything is one, and they don't really understand what oneness means, what unity means. That state of consciousness that is meditative, that is unified, they don't understand that. And these lead to, you know, these spiritual bypassing signs that we're talking about lead to people parroting phrases that we're all really common with, which, you know, I'll tell you a few of them. First of all, don't take it personally. It's just your ego. Whatever bothers you about someone is really only about you. That's a classic. This too shall pass. And last but not least, it's all just an illusion. You know, we've heard all of these before, okay? And usually people use these phrases in the completely wrong context and at the wrong time. You know, I've seen this all over the world where people will actually be in a tough situation and someone will be saying to them, you know, it's just your ego that's worried about this. Don't worry about that. And how does that help that person? Because they are in a real life situation. It's a very insensitive comment and they are not picking their time to apply these phrases in the right context. So in saying that, these phrases, they have some merit, but not when they are insensitively applied, okay? So when we insensitively apply them, then, you know, we are out of sync with each other. We're out of sync with, you know, ourselves actually too. So for example, you know, using such aphorisms like what we've been talking about, when dealing with another person's pain and situation, we'll distance ourselves from their pain and also our own when we act like that. That's important. And also our own. Remember, think about that. When we are insensitively applying such aphorisms to other people, you know. And, you know, this gets pretty crazy. This also gets into situations that, you know, people start to think that we create everything. Everything in reality is a situation that we created, which also implies that the other person doesn't exist. You know, we've all heard of the ridiculous situations where people will analyze, say, for example, a girl, if she got raped, a lot of people will say, oh, that's just her karma. You know, how ridiculous and insensitive is that sort of comment? People say that she created this situation. You know, what was she trying to teach herself by having chosen to be raped? You know, this is insensitive and disembodied metaphysics. And this is pure spiritual bypassing. And we see this everywhere in the world. People who follow spirituality, they get crazy and they think that, you know, they read too many books like The Secret, and they think that we are creating every situation without understanding there's another person in most of these situations. You know, counter to this, we could say the man who raped the girl. What was he trying to learn by raping her? Was this his karma? See, when you put it that way, it's completely psychotic. And someone who has fallen into this sort of hypnosis should really check themselves into a psychiatric hospital, I believe. Because this is not really the spirituality that the East and also the West were trying to promote and expound in the world. And this is definitely a misinterpretation of reality as an illusion. We create our reality. These are all misinterpretations. So basically, all of this is not so black and white, we need to remember. See, we still think in black and white terms when we think about everything. You know, it's just your ego talking. So someone would have read a book when it would have told them that we create everything, and anything that happens to us and our reaction to it is just our ego. Though that may be true, there are situations when someone is just being a bad person to you. You know, we cannot discount that. Someone is being a bad person to you, and your reaction in some sense can be valid. So when we see it too black and white, you know, we often fall into premature forgiveness, emotional disassociation, and we, like I said before, we often confuse anger with aggression and ill will. Anger itself can be healthy, we need to remember, but when we turn it outward and we act on the emotion towards whatever we think is causing the anger, then that turns to aggression, and that is not a healthy emotion. That is actually just a negative action turned outward. But we need to reframe our understandings of things like anger and fear and the way that we think negatively. They're not always negative. We need to understand that. So when we act like this, when we have this, a lot of people, they have this emotional disassociation. Like I said to you about the girl being raped and people thinking that's her karma, that's emotional disassociation, not understanding another person's plight and not understanding reality itself is not, you know, a one-way street. It's dynamic, it's complex. Robert Augustus Master says, you know, we are stranded in a metaphysical limbo, a zone of exaggerated gentleness, niceness, and superficiality. And this is what happens to the common spiritual bypasser. Because they emotionally disassociate, because they confuse anger with aggression, and because they promote aphorisms like "this too shall pass" in insensitive moments. So we have this, we develop this idea that we are in this metaphysical land of beauty, but we're actually in a metaphysical limbo, and people start to exude this, you know, this sort of grotesque niceness, and you see it very superficial. It's on the outside, you know, it's on the outside. And all that's happening really is this is really just a subtle game of spiritual one-upsmanship is what we're seeing, where people, you know, interested in spirituality, "I'm more humble than you are," or "I'm more listening than you are, I'm more caring than you are." And it's not real, it's not natural, we know it's not. You often see men, for example, they go from talking normal, like I'm talking to you, to talk like this. They start to talk like this, very low tone and high tone, I should say. And it comes across very caring, but you can tell that it's very superficial and not real. And that's not spirituality in a sense. That's just materialist spirituality, we could say. It's on the surface. It's very superficial. We see this with gurus as well. Okay. So like I said, you can be around a guru, you can talk to a guru or a spiritual teacher, whatever you want to say. Guru is a spiritual teacher. And when you're with a guru, when you're by themselves, they're very raw, they're very alive. You know, you can tell that they've done a lot of spiritual work and they're very open and happy. But then as soon as their disciples start to come around, they start to loosen their shoulders up. They start to talk a bit like this, and they're more caring and so forth and so on. They lose the edge, but they're living up to a persona. They don't even realize that they're living up to a persona that cannot be held onto. And this also implies that the guru themselves are spiritual bypassing. They are repressing certain aspects of themselves, and they are also judging themselves negatively by being real, and they're living up to something that is you cannot live up to. So this is very common, the guru that spiritual bypasses. You know, Robert Augustus Masters beautifully says, if a spiritual teacher is asked by his students about difficulties they are having with integrating their spiritual practice and the demands of intimate relationship, and he provides them with only big picture answers, waxing eloquently about the finite and infinite, the nature of the self, and so on, then he is engaged in spiritual bypassing, no matter how articulate and precise his answers may be, for he is, however inadvertently, avoiding dealing directly and relevantly with his students' personal and interpersonal pain, and probably his own as well. That's important, and probably his own as well. Keep that in mind. When you see a guru or spiritual teacher, let's look at Advaita Vedanta, for example. People will come to a teacher or guru of Advaita Vedanta, someone who follows the path of self-inquiry, and the person might have had a real traumatic experience in their past. Say they were abused as a child, and they say, I can't get rid of this pain deep within inside me. And then I've seen this, and then the guru has said, who is the one that observes this pain? They try to keep the person in the inquiry. You can see in some sense why, but how is that addressing the personal or the psychological aspect of the individual? They are not adept at doing that. That means if they're not adept at doing that, first of all, they're not a real spiritual teacher, and they're also spiritual bypassing, which is probably, as Masters was saying, you know, they cannot deal with their own pain, so it's hard to deal with other people's pain, basically. So if you want to, even if you're from the Advaita Vedanta tradition, you should be able to deal with other people's personal psychological pain. You know, in Buddhism, there are some paths in Buddhism that actually do deal with psychological pain. They understand the psychological aspect. There are, like Zen Buddhism, for example, there are a lot of paths in Buddhism that do address that, but there are also some that do not. But if we look at Advaita Vedanta, for example, like I said, you will see many who do not understand that there is still a personality here, even though that they believe that they have transcended the person. Like I said, you will see people stuff down their pain within themselves, and as soon as you say a wrong thing towards them, they bark like a vicious dog. This is spiritual bypassing, and this is also exhibited through the guru. I've seen gurus bark like dogs and roar like lions before when someone hasn't agreed with them, okay? So when you see someone, for example, if a woman's husband has been cheating on her, and she goes to the guru and says, you know, what do I do about this situation? And he just waxes lyrical about, you know, remain as the self. Do not engage with the psychology. When you see this sort of answer, when they say remain as the self, do not be the person and so forth and so on, this is classic spiritual bypassing, okay? So we need to be very careful of this. So some of the reasons why this is, why certain paths like Advaita Vedanta have been warped over hundreds and thousands of years is because our approach to spirituality is almost the outcome of the way our culture is these days. What I mean by that, our culture is a very fast food, get it now culture, which means no effort, no work. You'll see teachers say, just drop it and you'll be enlightened now. You see all these things, and you know with that person, they do drop it. They do drop their psychological pain for a day or two, but it comes back because that's the nature of the mind, the stream of consciousness. It'll just continue to bubble up until you start to engage with it and get to know it and work with it, okay? So we need to see that our approach to spirituality is completely infected by this get it now fast food culture. You know, a lot of people want everything for free these days. That's the way they think. They want everything for free because they don't want to deal with their own pain. It's like with spirituality. Can you please make me enlightened? I've seen this happen with gurus. They will ask the guru, can you enlighten me now, guru? I don't want to have to deal with any of this no more. And all this means is they don't want to deal with their own suffering, their own pain. They just want to get enlightenment for free. Like you go to McDonald's through the drive-thru and get a Big Mac. You know, not that you get that for free, but you know what I mean. To exhibit this, you know, a man once asked the Dalai Lama, you know, how he could quickly become enlightened. And the Dalai Lama wept for this man because he knew how much pain this man was in to ask for enlightenment quicker than how he was going to get it. The Dalai Lama understood that. You just cannot get it like that. You cannot get it like you cannot buy it like a cheap suit, you know. There needs to be some effort applied here, you know. And saying this with the work, with the psychological work that we all need to do to be engaged in, and that we don't get it for free in some sense, is similar to the Zen phrase, you know, before enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. After enlightenment, chopping wood, carrying water. So meaning that even when you do wake up, there is still work on a psychological level that needs to be done. You're not going to be free of the person. I'm not going to just disappear as Jason and start talking to you. Please address me as the universe. I'm not going to start talking like this. So we need to get real. You know, Robert Augustus Masters uses Mount Everest as an analogy. So he uses Mount Everest as an analogy. He says that we are like someone jumping in the helicopter going to the summit and saying, yeah, we're there. But the experience is fully empty. You haven't trekked up. You haven't done the hard work to get there. And I've trekked mountains as well. And the satisfaction when you get to a summit or a peak, it's beyond anything. You can't explain it because it takes weeks, sometimes months, to get to the top of a mountain. And the satisfaction you feel from that is something you take with you forever. And that's actually how we should be approaching our spirituality and enlightenment. We shouldn't be trying to get in the helicopter and going there and coming back down, and then next minute we're the same idiot that went up and came back. Nothing is transformed. So to put all this into a nutshell for you, and to summarize this, spirituality these days, in the modern day, is becoming more integral. It's becoming better when we merge Western psychotherapy with Eastern philosophy, when these two merge. This is the integral view. You often hear about the integral view, which became popular with Ken Wilber. You see people like Georg Feuerstein, who wrote a lot of books on Eastern philosophy, but learned from Ken Wilber about the integral view. Sri Aurobindo in India, all of these teachers who spoke about the benefits of Western psychology mixed with Eastern philosophy as a more mature path of spirituality for the modern day, because we are social creatures. If you're watching this video right now, you're a social creature. You have to engage with people. If someone asks you, hey man, can you just hold my coffee for a second? And you sit there and go, who is the one that wants to hold the coffee? This is not realistic. You know, you're not being real, you're not being genuine. You're in an intellectual mind game. You're actually not in any form of spiritual practice. You're disengaged from the immediate moment. So this integral view is very important and an aspect of alleviating spiritual bypassing, which we are starting to realize more and more in the modern day. So, and I believe actually that Western psychology and Eastern philosophy mixed together is like the new elite form of spirituality. It keeps you real, but it also keeps you connected to a deeper essence. You know, it's kind of like the Taoist idea. You've got your head in the clouds, but your feet firmly on the earth. It's that perspective, you know. So what that means then, in summary, if we're going to connect these and we're going to try to alleviate and outgrow our spiritual bypassing, we need to engage in shadow work, which is very important in Western psychology. So shadow work is basically the practice of acknowledging, facing, engaging, and integrating what we have ignored and turned away from, disowned and rejected in ourselves. Okay, so bringing basically those shadow elements to the light of consciousness, to the light of your own consciousness. Starting to turn inward to our pain, bring it up and bring it to the light of consciousness. So basically what we're being asked in shadow work is to get intimate with your own pain, everything you've suppressed within yourself. Get intimate with it, get to know it. Like you get to know your husband or your wife, or I should say your boyfriend or your girlfriend, you should know your husband and your wife by that time. But get to know it intimately. This is what shadow work's about. So stop turning away from it. Oh, that's not me, that's not me. That's just Jason thinking that. So this is not genuine and not real, and we all know that. So if we do get intimate with it, we will begin to outgrow our spiritual bypassing. Each and every one of us will outgrow it, and we will go to a deeper, deeper level. But we need to, like I said, we need to integrate these two hemispheres of thought, Western psychology and Eastern philosophy, to fully get into a high state of consciousness, a deeper state of consciousness, I should say. So if you want to know more about this subject, like I said, John Wellwood, he introduced the idea of spiritual bypassing. Any of his books would suffice. Another book I recommend is Spiritual Bypassing by Robert Augustus Masters, who I quoted a few times in this episode. I highly recommend this book. Robert's very blunt in his message somewhat, but it's needed. It needs for a lot of us to get real. Realize that we're not, you know, this enlightened yogi in the Himalayas, that we're still an ordinary person living in society. And also another book I recommend is my own book, Enlightenment Now, if you get a chance to read that. To wrap it all up, you know, we need to understand that basically if we're real about our spirituality, we've got to get our hands dirty. We have to engage in real inner work, real self-work, spiritual work, and stop pretending to be a spiritual person and putting it on the outside. I'm wearing these clothes now. I have dreadlocks now. I am spiritual. That's not really spirituality. So we need to realize that the real, authentic spiritual life is the constant dying to a deeper life. Thank you for watching today.